Now, I'm really sorry, because normally at this point, I would reveal a big box of chocolates and go, I've got some questions that need to be answered. And if you got one right, I could throw it. But I understand the current rules are that I'm not allowed to do that and touch something and then throw it, which means I might have a box of chocolates to eat later. No, it's not true. So I'd like someone to tell me anything they can remember about Daniel from the Old Testament. Any story at all that you can remember about Daniel from the Old Testament. And my willing assistant will arrive with a microphone and a long arm to so that we can hear it. Anybody got any story at all? Go for it.
He only ate vegetables, but he grew tall and strong.
Do you know what? The funny thing was, I had in my notes all the other stories, and then I was going to go, no, can you tell me an earlier one? But that's the first one. Okay, so you can have a seat. We're done. The story that Steve mentioned was they had to eat vegetables. Okay. So does anyone remember why, what other food they'd been offered that they weren't going to eat? The best food, okay, sort of, but that... came from the palace kitchen that was of the best. There's another important thing. Which palace did it come from? Okay. King Nebuchadnezzar, okay, who was the king of Babylon. So the first bit we read about Daniel is that he's been taken from Jerusalem to be a prisoner in Babylon. And the story is about how he's offered the best food from the palace. It probably would have been offered to idols as part of the sacrifice, which is why they didn't want to eat it. And his three friends, anyone remember their name? I knew you'd get that bit. Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego. Yes, long complicated names. They all said, we're not going to do this. Put us to the test. And they ate only fruit, only vegetables. They didn't drink the stuff that had been offered to idols. And after a period of time, the person who was in charge of their education and their upbringing and their training said, you're the best. And that person who was in charge of their training was someone from Babylon who had got all of the prisoners who'd come to Babylon and was basically training them to be slaves, helpful workers in Babylon. Not in Jerusalem, not where they wanted to be, but they'd been taken, prisoners, and moved over. So the reason I'm telling this, Daniel is one of those prisoners who'd been captured by the army of Babylon, taken as a hostage or prisoner of war to be a slave, educated, okay? So that's Daniel. Cast your mind back a few weeks, okay? So Daniel gets taken into exile as a prisoner. Cast your mind back a few weeks, we were looking at Nehemiah in church, okay? So Nehemiah is the person who started to lead the people back from exile, back to Jerusalem. The reading we're going to look at today comes from between the time of Daniel and the time of Nehemiah. So Jeremiah, chapter 29, okay? And Jeremiah is writing God's message to Daniel, to Daniel's friends, to all of those who've been taken captive into Babylon. Okay, so I like looking at how the Bible all mixes together and merges together. So, firstly, the first verse of the book of Daniel says, you might
need to... In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand.
I feel like I've got a stunt double to do the complicated words for me. Okay, so the key names are Nebuchadnezzar and Jehoiakim. Okay, so now we're going to look at Jeremiah chapter 29 and the first two verses.
This is a letter that the prophet Jeremiah sent from Jerusalem to what was left of the elders among the exiles, to the priests and prophets and all the exiles who Nebuchadnezzar had taken from Babylon to Jerusalem, including King Jehoiakim, the queen mother, the government leaders, and all the skilled labourers and craftsmen.
Okay, so that comes from the Message version. OK. Okay? But again, it's the same people all getting a mention. So we know that Jeremiah was writing to Daniel. I love the fact that you can see those bits and it's really clear. Okay, Daniel, his friends, all those around him, the queen, the king, the government leaders, the skilled labourers and craftsmen. Might come back to that in a minute. Okay, so that's who Jeremiah's writing to. If this was you in Daniel's position, what message would you be wanting to hear? So, as I mentioned, over the last week or so, Claire and I, my wife, have been in self-isolation on the caravan, in the caravan on the driveway. It's been a little unusual. And we managed to find a laptop and a whole load of DVDs, and we've sat and watched a few of them. And I have to confess, mostly we've watched the ones that we bought for the children, you know, a few years ago, because they're fun, they're entertaining. So we've watched Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, Home, Moana, all sorts of things. It's been fun. They're good films. They're entertaining. And it's interesting to see how often in those films there's a separation. There's people who are taken away and put aside. So Aladdin and Jasmine, the princess, are held captive by the evil Jafar. The beauty, Belle, has her father held captive by the beast. In Home, I like Home, very funny. The earth is invaded by aliens who manage to separate a mother and her daughter. If you have slightly older tastes, then the Taken film series offer a similar kind of thing. And over lockdown, with the family at home, I have watched more Neighbours than I ever really wanted to. And I'm sure I've seen that plot line in Neighbours and other television series. So the plot line of one group in force, taken away, separation, and another group writing or communicating with them. And in all of those films or TV shows, the message seems nearly always the same. One group saying, help, we need rescuing. And the other group saying, we're coming to rescue you. Or in some of the slightly older films, we're going to beat up those who took you. So those are the recurring themes. Those are the messages that come from Disney and other bits. One group, we need rescuing. The other group, we're on our way to help. So let's have a look at what God's message is via Jeremiah's. We'll look at the next bit. There we go. Now, Andrew has been very good to us this week. He's phoned a number of times to check we're doing okay and make sure if we need any help with anything. And then I looked at verse 3 and all those long, complicated names, and I thought, Andrew, you could come and read verse 3, but we won't do that. That would be a bit mean. Okay? But basically, what the first bit of that says is, with all those long, tongue-twister names, the letter was carried by two people who were the king's messengers, and who Jeremiah could trust, because he knew who their dads were. Okay? So let's see if God's message is, hold tight, rescue is on the way. Perhaps he's going to say, fight, make trouble in the land, disrupt, annoy the locals. I'm sending help. Let's look at what Jeremiah says.
Build houses and make yourselves at home. Put in gardens and eat what grows in that country. Marry and have children. Encourage your children to marry and have children so that you will thrive in the country and not waste away. Make yourselves at home there and work for the country's welfare. Pray for Babylon's well-being, and if things go well for Babylon, things will go well for you.
Nope. So God says, this is where you are now. This is the place I want you to be. Later in this chapter is quite a well-known verse where God says, I know the plans I have for you, plans to give you hope and a future. But those plans from God were for 70 years for God's people to live in a foreign land without the freedoms they were used to, without being able to worship God as they wanted to, and having to be ruled over by other people, knowing that this wasn't ultimately where they would be forever. Perhaps Disney got it a bit wrong. So later in the Bible, in 2 Corinthians, again, we're going to look at the Message version, God likens our time on earth to that sort of an experience.
We know that when these bodies of ours are taken down like tents and folded away, they will be replaced by resurrection bodies in heaven, God-made, not handmade, and we'll never have to relocate our tents again. Sometimes we can hardly wait to move, and so we cry out in frustration. Compared to what's coming, living conditions around here seem like a stopover in an unfurnished shack, and we're tired of it. We've been given a glimpse of the real thing, our true home, our resurrection bodies. The Spirit of God whets our appetite by giving us a taste of what's ahead. He put a little of heaven in our hearts so that we'll never settle for less.
I think it's really amazing to look at that kind of passage and the description, particularly in a newer translation, that actually our bodies are taken down like tents and folded away. They'll be replaced by resurrection bodies in heaven, and we'll never have to relocate our tents again. He puts a little bit of heaven in our hearts, so we'll never settle for less. But at the moment, God says to us, you're on earth. Build houses and make yourselves at home. Put in gardens and eat what grows. And the bit that I think has been really interesting and a bit of a think about for me is that phrase, if things go well for Babylon, things will go well for you. That we have a duty and an obligation to work in society, to try and get society going well, because if things go well for Babylon, things go well for you. For a lot of people, September seems like the start of a new work year. Children starting their new school years, or maybe even a new school. Lots of people have had their yearly holiday and start back at work. So as this working year starts, I want you to think about and remember that in all the things that you do and all the things that you spend your time doing, if things go well for Babylon, things will go well for you. You have a role to play where you are, and God has put you there for a reason.